from the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School. This is Work and Life on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. Here is Professor Stu Friedman.
Welcome to Work and Life on SiriusXM's Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School. I'm your host, Stu Friedman. I'm an organizational psychologist here at Wharton, and I am the director of the Wharton Work-Life Integration Project, which I founded way back in 1991. And what we do on this show is to explore those crucial challenges that everybody is facing at the intersection of work and the rest of life, your family, your community, and who you are as a person, your private self, your mind, body, and spirit. How do you integrate those? That's what we're trying to help you to discover new ideas and solutions for, to become more informed, more effective at creating a sense of harmony among the different parts of your life, and to move the revolution in work and life forward. I am thrilled to tell you that on today's show, I'll be joined very shortly by the award-winning investigative journalist Josh Leves about we'll be talking about his experience in suing his employer for paternity leave and his great and important new book, All In, How Our Work-First Culture Fails Dads, Families, and Businesses, and How We Can Fix It Together. It's being hailed as the lean-in for men. You will definitely not want to miss this segment. Plus, later, two freshly minted Wharton MBA graduates are going to share their thoughts on how they're thinking about integrating the different parts of their lives as they emerge into the workforce. We come to you live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern from the amazingly beautiful campus here at the University of Pennsylvania. Lovely evening here today. And love to hear from listeners. So, what are you struggling with at the intersection of work and the rest of your life? What can we do to help you create positive change in your world? Write to me at businessradio@siriusxm.com and follow on Twitter at Stu Friedman, that's Stewfriedman, and at Biz Radio, B-I-Z Radio 111, if you have ideas for guests we should have on the show or topics you want us to cover. Now, a couple of days ago, the Mad Men series reached its finale. There he is, falling. But then he ended up on the couch there, just kind of surveying the landscape. I'm not going to do any spoilers here, but I am going to just point out there's so many things we could talk about Mad Men. Maybe we'll do a show on this in the near future, but the freedom of choice that women ultimately emerged from that decade able to pursue, and how the story of that series is in some ways the story of how gender roles in the workplace, especially for women, created new freedoms that allow them to bust the constraints of tradition and to come out of it with optimism and discretion for how they could lead the lives they truly wanted. Now, it wasn't so for men at that time, although we see Stan emerging as the face, the fuzzy face of the new man coming into the 70s. But the revolution that began in the 60s is very much underway, and it's fascinating to think about how much has changed and yet how much more needs to change. And Josh Leves, my first guest, is one of the people who is helping to instigate it in our time. Josh is an investigative journalist, an expert on modern fatherhood, and author of the powerful new book, All In, How Our Work-First Culture Fails Dads, Families, and Businesses, and How We Can Fix It Together. At the time of the birth of his third child, Josh sued his employer in order to obtain a paternity leave for biological fathers that matched their leaves for mothers and adoptive parents. And he won. His new book starts with this journey, but it doesn't end there. Like Sandberg's Lean In, it's a call to action. Josh, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Hey, Stu, thank you so much for having me. And you know what? I want to tell you, right now is such an all-in moment. It's perfect timing. I just got my two boys into the bath, and my wife's taking over from here. The baby just went down for the night. I'm locked away in the office talking to you. And, you know, this is what parents do now. We try to do it all. And it is exactly what you're saying. It's the emergence from the Mad Men era, and that's definitely something we should talk about.
All right. Let me just call out to our listeners. If you are wrestling with obtaining leave from your employer and you have a question for Josh about what to do about it, you can give us a call, 844-942-7866. That's 844-WHARTON, 844-942-7866. Well, so what's your take on the portrayal of men in the series and how it sort of set the ground for where you are now moving in terms of the changing role of men in society and the workplace?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I did not watch it religiously like almost everybody else in the world. But I have seen it, and I can tell you this. What, you know, even President Obama brought up the term mad men when he was talking in one of his State of the Union addresses about the ridiculous state of some of our policies that are still in the workplace.
Right.
Mad Men is a perfect summary of the entrenched sexism that once existed in the American workplace, but that to this day is responsible for the policies and the laws and the stigmas that we have. And that's what I was up against. That's what other people are up against. I mean, you know, we hear a lot of complaints about the fact that America is the only developed economy with no paid maternity mm-hmm. leave, mm-hmm. which is true. We also make it so hard to get paternity leave at all. Only 14% of companies give men any paid paternity leave. It's so hard to get. But we rarely hear people talk about why this is. It's all based on one thing. Our structures are based on this presumption to this day that women will stay home mm-hmm. and men will stay at work. So when someone like me comes along and says, wait a second, I'm needed to take care of my kids, it just throws the whole system for a loop. And that's what we need to change together.
You know, I was at the White House conference last year and on working families, and they'd asked Christina Hendricks, who plays Joan on the show, who is herself a single mother, to talk about that subject and to bring in, you know, real life Mad Men lead character to talk about the antiquated model of our Mad Men era policy and the cultural values underpinning it and how those are holding us back. So you were and still are a successful award-winning reporter for a blue chip organizations, Time Warner, CNN, before that NPR. When you and your wife were ready to have your third child, you sued Time Warner for paternity leave. So what was it that led you to that decision? What was the turning point for you?
It was, yeah. So here's what happened. So, you know, I was, as you say, a journalist, and I was also covering, in addition to covering major news, I was also, at that point, already a fatherhood columnist and mm-hmm. writing stories about fatherhood, following your work, and doing segments on air, interviewing other dads. And then, all of a sudden, the tables got turned, and I was the dad in the news, because what happened was we determined that, for several reasons, I would be needed at home after the birth of our daughter, our third child. And Time Warner had an extremely unusual policy. It had but it's also the type of policy that many places have. Time Warner would allow any person who had a baby to take care of 10 paid weeks at home unless that person impregnated the mother. So if I had put my child up for adoption and some other guy adopted her, he could get 10 paid weeks. If we had used a surrogate, I could get 10 paid weeks.
What?
If we had used a sperm donor, could get 10 paid
what
weeks.
What was the theory behind that? What was the
right.
form?
So here's how it happened, and this is what I explain in the book. The way these policies are structured, you have to follow the money. And it's so important for everyone to understand what happens. Here's what had happened. Time Warner has a disability policy, and it was using its disability policy to pay women for 10 weeks after they would have a baby. So basically, they were encouraging all women to have their doctors sign a form saying that they needed 10 paid weeks for physical recovery. That way, it would be their time off would be paid entirely through a disability policy. Then Time Warner had decided, well, there are some people in other situations, like maybe perhaps a gay couple or a couple that chooses to adopt. We want to give 10 paid weeks to them and maybe a surrogate who needs, okay. So in all those cases, but I went to them in advance and I said, look, the only group of people you're not allowing the option of 10 paid weeks to be home caregiving for the child is a man in the traditional situation. And I said, I'm sure this was an oversight. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that anyone intended this. And I did this completely in secret. I found out the protocol. I went straight to benefits. But they wouldn't give me an answer for months. And then my daughter was born in an emergency, and they still wouldn't give me an answer. And then 11 days later, I'm home holding my 4-pound preemie daughter and taking care of my sick wife and my two boys and emailing benefits saying, I need to know, am I coming back to work now or am I getting – and that's when they wrote me back and said – no. So they wouldn't give it to me. So it was, you know, clearly a discriminatory decision. And so I took legal action. I filed with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And that's the story.
Wow. So what changed for you when that decision came down, personally and in terms of your role as an advocate for social and policy change in our country?
Yeah. Well, it was really interesting. You know, I knew that in terms of my career, it was, you know, an interesting twist that suddenly I was going to be the guy in the news. But what I didn't know, he said, what happened for me there? I did not realize, and this is where the book comes from, I did not realize until the night that I announced on social media, on Tumblr, that I was taking this step, how many women and men it would galvanize. You know, what happened was, as soon as I announced this, it was like I unleashed the floodgates of love, and all these groups started supporting me, a group founded by Maria Shriver, who's now a big supporter of the book, and Sheryl Sandberg, who's in the book, and mom blogs and dad blogs. And so I became fascinated as a dad and as a journalist. What was it about my case that was galvanizing so many women and men? And I realized that what it is that we are all in this together. All of us who want real equality for our daughters and our sons, for our wives and our husbands, we are all up against these backward structures that are pushing women to stay home and pushing men to stay at work. So, you know, why to this day is it only 4.6% of CEOs in the S&P 500 are women? You know, nearly a century after the right to vote. Are women. Only 4.6%. Why is that? Well, we have these structures that don't make any sense, are bad for business, bad for the economy, bad for all of us. So that's what happened for me. I learned through this experience that we are all in this together, all those of us who want equality. And so that's where the book All In comes from.
And so have they changed other policies as a result of this this shift in, and let's call it a correction in what was a discriminatory policy, perhaps an oversight, perhaps not?
Right. So what happened was a year later they announced a new policy, or they actually didn't announce it. They just created a new policy. But I saw what they had done and announced it, and they revolutionized their policy, made it infinitely better. Dads like me used to only get 2 paid weeks. Now we get 6 paid weeks. Moms who give birth get more time than they used to, and they're now getting 12 weeks or 14 weeks in some cases. So Time Warner, you know, upped its policy. But what's really happening in a bigger way, and this is important, you know, for everyone who's interested in business, is that more and more businesses are discovering on their own that having policies that allow families to make their own decisions about who will do which role is better for business. So you're seeing companies like Facebook and Google and Yahoo, but also not just in Silicon Valley. You've got Bank of America, Johnson & Johnson just made an announcement. More and more of these big businesses are discovering that when they offer these kinds of policies, it helps attract and retain employees, and it makes them happier and more productive, and it works for the bottom line. So that's that part is the good news. The bad news is that most companies are not on that bandwagon. Things are actually going in a negative direction. And so that's why I write about how we need to turn that around.
I can't tell you, Josh, how heartwarming it is for me to hear this. I too, have 2 sons and a daughter. The first one was born in 1987, and that was a transformative moment for me as I then began to think about and talk with my students and then with many others about what the arrival of the new generation, what does it mean for us personally and professionally, and what are we going to do to care for the next generation in a way that allows us all to lead the lives we truly want. So since the late 80s, I and a bunch of other people have been, you know, advocating for just the kinds of changes that you're talking about here, and to see the flowering of these ideas in so many places now in our society. Still a long way to go. But you know, if you look at how much has changed since the Mad Men era, a lot has changed, especially for women. But now we're seeing change for men. What do you think has shifted in the cultural, you know, consciousness that has allowed for and really enabled people like you to come forward and to really move the needle further?
Well, what's happened to some extent, the positive part of this comes from worker empowerment to a large extent. It's more and more workers who recognize that they have choices. And that's why Silicon Valley really has helped lead the way on this. I spend a lot of time out there. Workers in Silicon Valley, keep in mind that they can get another job. Not everyone feels that way, especially since the 2008 financial fiasco. But culturally, I think here's what happened. My generation, our generation, grew up on Free to Be You and Me. It never occurred to me that my sister or any of my female friends would be less capable as leaders in
so let me just situate
world.
This for for the readers, for our listeners, rather. You are, you graduated college in 94. Do I have that right?
I'm 43 now.
Okay, so we call those Gen Xers.
Yes, exactly. Right? Yeah, people say, yeah, NPR once had me do this, some story, and they claimed that I'm the total Gen Xer. So for whatever that's worth. So what happened was, you know, we had this Free to Be You and Me, and and then we got to the workplace, and we had children, and we discovered that the workplace never did grow up.
No.
The and so, you know, here's a couple examples in my book. I got this one guy. His baby was born in an emergency. He took off 2 days from work, comes back to work on Monday. His boss comes in and rebukes him for having taken off 2 whole days. That boss is a pregnant woman. But, you know, the gender equality activists who I interviewed are not surprised at all, because there are a lot of women and men in leadership positions who have these backward ideas. There's another boss who told the worker he could not have the time he was legally entitled to for caregiving, because women are supposed to do the caregiving unless they're in a coma or dead. And that's a quote. And just the other day, so a few days ago, you have a lot of listeners in Canada. Hi, folks in Canada.
Yep.
So I was on a radio station in Toronto. I actually just posted this on Tumblr tonight. So I was on the station, and two people called in to say Mad Men was one of the best eras in the history of the world, and that we should go back to it, that the job of a man is to work, the job of a woman is to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem is that we still have a lot of people who think that, and that's where we all have to be all in pushing against that, and bringing about this cultural understanding that true equality will never get anywhere as long as people hold on to those old notions.
Well, I've been saying for decades now that social change on this front takes time, but there are things that we can do. And one of the important things, of course, is to have people who have a pulpit and a microphone to tell their story, which is what you have done so eloquently and so powerfully in this new book, and to demonstrate that there are a lot of options that are available for people to assume roles in society that fit. And I love this aspect of what you're saying in your programmatic advocacy, and that is individualized solutions for families that work for them. There's no one size fits all, but telling your story is crucial. How do you think people can do that in a way that really starts to affect the kinds of expectations that people have for men and women?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when I started doing this book, the folks at HarperCollins and my agent, they said, what we want, they said, this is your polemic, they said, this is your lean in, lay out the steps, give us 1 through 10, 1 through 5, whatever. So I do that, and I read about it, and you know, there's different fronts. So some of it, I talk you through how to, in a very positive, optimistic way, work with the people who run your business and say, hey, here's some information that might really help us. I also talk about ways that we can galvanize for changes in the law. And this is where there's such a huge misunderstanding in America. Paid family leave is something that we need. It's a human basic. When a child comes out of the womb, it should have a parent home with it for a bunch of weeks who does not have to worry about putting food on the table for that time.
Keyword being they're a parent, not necessarily a mother. It could be a mother or a father. Let me just remind listeners, I'm speaking with investigative journalist Josh Levs, and he's a modern fatherhood expert and the author of the great new book, All In: How Our Work-First Culture Fails Dads, Families, and Businesses, and How We Can Fix It Together. All right, so we're talking about things to do to fix it together, including social policy change. Please continue.
So I'm glad you said that in the subtitle about what's best for businesses. So here's the thing. People hear paid family leave, right? And they think, wait a second, you want to make a law saying that businesses have to pay people when they're not working? No. That's not what paid family leave is. I imagine if I started a business, I would not want to be required to do that. That's not what paid family leave is. Paid family leave currently exists in California and New Jersey.
And Rhode Island.
There were certain leaders who of the business world who said, oh, it would destroy jobs. It hasn't. Businesses now like it, and so do workers. You create basically an insurance fund. And when people have a qualifying emergency, not just for kids, but for spouses or taking care of an elderly parent, when you have a qualifying situation, you get paid out of that fund. And what that does is it gets people to stop dropping out of the workforce entirely, which is what they're doing now. Instead, they take their paid time off, then they come back to work. So everybody comes out ahead. It helps grow the economy. There's something called the Family Act now that's being suggested in Congress that could do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that politically, creating something like that could be tough because it has the word tax in it. So I suggest in the book a potential way to create paid family leave in America by lowering taxes. No matter what, we've got to do something, Stu, because this is not working, and it's too painful to see these families struggle with having to rush back to work after the baby leaves the womb because they need the money.
No, it's Neanderthal. I mean, it's just it's so backwards, and it's something that I've been writing about also in the book that we did on the comparing the, your generation with the generation of people that just graduated here at Wharton. In the advocacy piece of that, we made a big point and have had many guests on the show talking about the success of the experiments in California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island, where the and research has been done on this showing that businesses like it because, as you say, there's a better attraction and retention of people as a result of these policies that don't cost anything.
Yeah. And when people find this out, they start to support it. You know, there are some surveys of U.S. voters that show that majority of Republicans want a paid family leave insurance program. And, you know, we have what's called FMLA, the Family and Medical Leave Act, that allows people unpaid time off. And there were some of the same naysayers when that was being considered and under Clinton. And some people saying it would destroy jobs. And I've got people in the book, as you saw, you know, prominent conservative leaders like Jim Daly, the head of Focus on the Family, who say now, looking back, he says he's embarrassed he was ever against FMLA, who doesn't think people should be against it. You know, ultimately, we are a nation that has public schools. We have Medicaid for children because we understand that caring for children is good for society. This is just another piece of that. It's another human basic. You make sure that a kid can be taken care of for several weeks at least by a parent. And yes, anyone who thinks that only a mom is capable of being the caregiver doesn't know the truth. Men are just as capable.
Yes, in some cases more so. I mean, it really gets down to what people want to do, what roles they want to play. And your example and so many others are demonstrating that the role of caregiver and breadwinner can be taken up by a man or a woman.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because I know you have a lot of business leaders who listen. And in the end, this is just basic logic. Sometimes the best person for a job is a woman. Of course. So sometimes that's going to happen. Why would you possibly want a policy that pushes the woman to stay home and the man to stay at work if the woman is the better person for the job? And sometimes the woman's making more money. You know, there are all sorts of reasons that it makes sense. So what we have now is this free to be you and me generation wanting to live out this equality. And there's so many dads in this book who open up about their work-life conflicts, their struggles. And our, you know, I know you talk about some things that are in this book, and I love it. You talk about, you know, mind and spirit. Our work-life conflicts in general are in part to be attributed to these backward structures that we have that prevent us from having legitimate work-life integration. And businesses that open up their minds, you know, business leaders who open up their minds and think, well, how can we instead tap into the power of work-life integration, tap into the power of great women and great men who happen to have children and also want to be great employees? Those businesses are discovering that it's a huge opportunity for them.
Yes, indeed. And the demand for the kinds of programs that we've been developing here for decades and now bringing to the world, including in a MOOC that I teach that has reached 140,000 people worldwide on this topic. I mean, the demand for useful tools and ideas for change is huge. And it is truly a new moment. What else do you think is going to be essential? You know, listeners might be wondering, what can I do? What can I do to create positive change for my business or as an employee to create greater freedom and the support that I need to be the parent, friend, you know, child, person who I want to be beyond work? What other ideas do you have?
Yeah, I'll tell you, one of the things people talk to me about the most, and it's interesting, I didn't see this coming, is a chapter that's called Male Privilege, Female Gatekeeping, and the Bonus Temptation. So what, you know, what I talk about in the book, as you know, is also that, yes, we have these structures, but we also have individual responsibilities. Mm-hmm. We need to really take a good hard look at ourselves, good hard look in the mirror. So male privilege, and there's an expert in the book who talks about this, and, you know, he is just, like you, one of a handful of men and women who are really pushing these things forward. And he says that he believes that, you know, a lot of men talked a good game about equality, but when it came down to it, weren't ready to fight for it because it's easier to say, sorry, honey, you know, this is on you because I don't have a choice. And then there's female gatekeeping, which is the flip side of that, which is some women who, you know, grew up taking care of grew up babysitting and grew up believing that girls and women are better at taking care of kids. So when their husbands take the baby, they say, no, you don't do it like that. Let me do it. Let me do it. So these are times that, you know, we all, as men and women, need to look at ourselves and say, okay, do I need to change my own individual attitudes in order to be ready to stand up for equality and to allow it to flourish and to set the right examples for our children. And then the bonus temptation is this, it explains the system that's been used in certain other countries in which there's piles of time that are available to all parents and then a pile of time available to women and a pile of time available to men. And what happened there was, you know, here in this country, because of the stigmas, because men sometimes come back to work after paternity leave and they get fired or they get demoted, they are literally punished for being caregivers. A lot of guys don't take it.
And did you
usually
get that?
It's incredible.
Did you experience that when you came back?
So I did not. And that's part of the message. And I want people to know you don't have to be afraid. You know, when I came back to work, my colleagues, you know, people at my level, my colleagues were openly supportive, cheering me in the hallways, hugging me and kissing me.
Really?
So they weren't punching you to say, hey, you're busting the rate here, you're making us look bad, or you're a slacker?
The opposite. They were saying things like, this is what it gets down to. They didn't know. Workers don't know their rights in this country. So many guys said to me, I always hated that policy, but I didn't know we have the right to change it, or I was afraid to. Now, are there certain bosses high up in the ranks who think of me, you know, as being some, like, I don't know, like unmanly whatever, which is what happens to some guys? Maybe. But if so, they haven't said it directly to me. But because so many men, and I trace this through in the book, so many men, unfortunately, do face that stigma. Mm-hmm. They are not even taking the paid leave they get. Mm-hmm. But in countries where there's a public policy making like 6 or 8 weeks available to men, then they take it. Because then you look crazy not to take it.
Right.
I mean, turning down 1 or 2 weeks maybe, but who turns down 8 paid weeks? Mm-hmm.
Well, even in Sweden, it took years for that to become normal for men. But that was, you know, 3 decades ago. Josh, we have to wrap up here. What's the one main thing you want to make sure our listeners take away from learning about this great new book that you've got for us?
I want people to know that, look, I went into this with a totally open mind. I didn't have a position. I didn't know what I was going to find out about policies and all these things. And what I found is exciting because we've got a win-win-win-win here. If we stand up for better policies, we do. It's just like the subtitle of the book says, we make things better for women and for men, and we make things better for business and the economy and the cause of equality. There isn't a loser when we stand up, follow the steps I lay out and all in, and make the kind of changes that we need. And HarperCollins will get mad at me if I don't say you can learn all about this at my website, joshlabs.com.
I was going to do that for you, but thank you.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
And thank you for spending time with us in the interstitial moment here in your home this evening where you've been able to extract yourself and share your wisdom on this great new initiative you've got. I've been speaking with award-winning investigative journalist and author Josh Levs. Josh, thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, listen, thank you for the interview, and also thank you so much for being a leader on this. You have really paved the way for people like me, and I'm forever grateful.
That's very kind of you. For more information about Josh Levs' new book, All In, How Our Work-First Culture Fails Dads, Families, and Businesses, and How We Can Fix It Together, please do visit his wonderful website, very informative stuff, joshlevs.com. That's joshlevs.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, as I do, at Josh Levs, joshlevs. Just ahead, we'll hear from two people of the next generation, two freshly minted Wharton MBA graduates. It's Anita Hossein and Minlan Duan, about their thoughts on how they'll integrate the different areas of their lives in the future. I'm Stu Friedman, and you're listening to Work and Life on Business Radio, powered by the Wharton School, Sirius XM 111.